Hello and welcome to the Modern New Podcast, where we take a look at classic and favorite albums. I'm Trevor.
I'm Barrick. And frankly said, I'm again very excited. Oh, that's too bad.
Continue.
To have a look on this wide ocean of information about the upcoming album.
Upcoming?
The upcoming album. The album we want to discuss today, because it's one of the most critically acclaimed albums of the last 10 years, I would say. Yeah. It's by Frank Ocean, and it has the name Blonde.
Spelled with an E or without an E, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah. That's, I think, up to you, listeners.
Yes. So, Barrick, as it was your album of choice, how about we start with you with the first listening?
Yeah, let's go directly into it. And I have to say my first listening was not in the last weeks. My first listening to this album was directly, very shortly after it came out, which was in August 2016. For you, it was really the first listening on the last.
I'd never heard it before. I knew one song from his previous album.
The Channel Orange.
From Channel Orange.
Okay. Yeah, but for me, it was not like with Nas, Illmatic, or Block Party albums that I also like to talk about it, that I had it for years in my life. For Blonde, I recognized on the websites I liked about pop culture, like The Ringer or Pitchfork or whatever, that it was such a buzz in 2016 and the previous years about the artist Frank Ocean. And there was always rumors, when will his next album be coming out? And then I figured, like, in 2016, well, here it is. And I remember I was on the airport in Munich on a Saturday. I was coming back from a business trip in Estonia. And then I start to listen to it. And the only thing I really can recall from the first listening was one song I really liked immediately and listened a couple of times to.
And that was?
Do you have a guess?
Pink and White?
Yeah, it was Pink and White. I think it's like the first really ear catcher of this album. And I enjoyed it and then listened quite a lot to it. But never really, and that basically was the relationship for me and the album. For it. Not because I didn't like the first listening, but it just didn't stick with me. And then in this year, I got a new favorite song, I would say, from this album. For whatever reason, because some Spotify algorithm or I don't know.
So it was just like randomly popped up in
your... Yeah, it randomly popped out in one unmixed on the weekend. There was Nikes, the opener of Frank Ocean.
And the first single.
And the only song that has a video from
there. Yeah.
So, and then...
That confused me. There's so many fan videos.
Yeah.
Trying to see what a video for the album looked like. And they're not even... Nikes isn't even on YouTube.
No.
The video.
The official
one,
not. You
have to go somewhere else to find it. Yeah.
So, and then I was intrigued again. And, wow, this artist is so discussed and so big. Intrigued me again. And then I figured out that Pitchfork voted this album as the best album of the 2010 of the whole decade. I said, well, that's an album we should talk about and see how we like it. So that's the background of this. And at my then not very first listening, but in the process, the first listening again, no surprise, it starts with Nike. And what's interesting there is that I'm not a fan of autotune.
I hate autotune.
I really, really hate autotune, kind of. I hate, maybe is the right word. And this song starts with an autotune. It is autotune.
It's also
right?
pitchy. It's a pitch shift, I think.
Yeah, I'm not
more than autotune. The more I heard it.
Yeah, that was also a question from me to you. Is it really autotune or is it just high pitched?
I think it's just a pitch shift. Because I listened to a video, I watched a video later where they took it and just did a half step down pitch shift and it was his normal voice.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, I don't know that it's autotune. I think it is pitch shift. I first thought it was autotune though.
But yeah, me too. And that's why it still surprised me why I like that sound so much. From the first, I really like it. I think there's something in it, something dreamy, but still going forward.
Did you like it the first time you heard it?
No, not the very first time. At the airport, I was a little bit confused about this allegedly autotune. I was like, what was that? But maybe now, because I listen to it more and more, like I don't even think so much more about the autotune. But just in this process, I said, that's strange that I like it. And I was then at a friend's, and I made that song up. And said, Perry, what's this? That's a song you like? Because all my friends knew I don't like autotune. But yeah, I really like the mood of the song. I'm an easy catch with some phrases like he sings about. You need a ring like Carmelo, like the basketball phrases.
Yeah. I figured that would be why I was like, Merrick's gonna like that.
Yeah, I like that. And I like the second verse, where he stopped using pitching it up. And yeah. Then I thought, wow, that's good. And then it's even better, I think, that this verse than it would be without the autotune part. Maybe the song would be better without it. But after going a little deeper to it, I'm not sure. And I also like that there is like a half rapping, half singing style that I also do not like very often, but I think he's doing it quite good.
He can also sing, so.
Yeah.
Rapping, I think if you have a decent flow, you can get away with it if you're a normal singer, but if you take a rapper and get them to sing as well, I don't know that there's that many rappers that can actually.
Yeah.
Sing that great. Like Frank Ocean has a fantastic voice.
Yes, there's a video I just saw today with his first TV appearances at the Jimmy Fallon show with the Roots. He sings a song from his first album, Bad Religion. He sings very good. That's really good. But for Nikes, this song it sets the right, so the perfectly fitting tone for the whole album, from the sound, from the mood, and how he uses words. I mean, also to start a song like called Nikes is like almost like advertising, but listening to the lyrics, you see that, well, it is about like, yeah, materialistic life and hedonism, and it's kind of critical, but it's not so open forward. So you can make the case, yeah, he's sees like both sides of the medal. That was what I
yeah exactly
think. And which later is something that comes a lot of it is a recurring theme through the album, and that's something I really really like. And then I immediately like to switch to the second song, Ivy, because immediately has a different tone, but still fits into the mood. And this is something that intrigued me a lot, because it sounded like I expected more like something more soul music style or R&B style or something. And this has a just a different sound. Later, I figured out why, because other artists that were involved in that production, I think. And it has like this crossover between soul singing and like an indie sound. That's quite cool and quite rare, I think. And what I also hear like is not the switch of the low pitch and high pitch, like in the first song, which he doesn't have here, but he has like a switch between singing more silently and then dialing it up. And so for me, it's with the lyrics, as mentioned in other episodes before, sometimes hard to get immediately what it's about, but you get the feeling that this is kind of something about a lost love or something like that.
And yeah, this song I wrote down that it feels like it's like a pouring out the heart kind of thing.
Yeah, and it feels immediately honest. The all over vibe is, it's very honest. Yeah. I feel so not so catchy like Nike's, for example, and this song afterward, but still something, the song I really like. And then there comes a song that I would say is just a great hit for me. I think it's maybe not something that is on all radios, but that's just a very great popular music song.
I think you just have to look at who worked on it with them.
Yes.
That's kind of guaranteed gold right there.
Absolutely. And
get Pharrell to produce and get Beyonce to do backing vocals. You're kind of
uncredited. So this is something, I mean, we can go into the deep dive, but we can mention it now. He got uncredited background singing from Beyonce.
Yeah.
And
that's pretty cool.
That's really cool. And the production sound totally makes sense. I had no idea that it was from Pharrell while listening to it, but the moment I heard that song, I was, okay, that makes sense.
I knew that Pharrell had done one song, and as soon as I heard that song, I was like, that's the Pharrell song.
Yeah, then I get that. This is a song that immediately floats the room with warm and sunlight, I think.
Yeah.
So. And this is also a song this song was the trigger why I remembered when I listened this album for the first time. Because I said it in other episodes before, for great music, I remembered exactly where I was when I listened to it. And this song is one of them. I exactly can remember how I was sitting in the airport of Munich. It was a Saturday. I had a good week of work. I was exhausted, but quite happy to go home. And then I listened to that song, and that was one of these great music moments. Just like, that's great. So, and this, without this song, I think I would not be able to recall that. That song was the trigger song.
That's actually something after, or in the process of doing the research and stuff for this, I started backtracking and going through and looking for the next album for the next episode. I started going through albums that I wanted to cover and noticed that a large amount of the albums that I still have stuck in my head that I remember when I first listened to it was during travel times. I don't know why.
But I can totally relate to that. Traveling and music has something, a special bond for me as well. Maybe it is because I traveled a lot before COVID times, but it's especially the situation. Flying back had whatever interesting trip, if it was on private or by work, and it's so good to reflect. It doesn't matter if you're sitting in the car or in the airplane or the airport, or I don't know, just walking around a city you don't know. Yeah. I think it has
a big one for me,
a special connection. So I'm interested about that one. And then after that hit, there is an interlude.
Yeah.
It's called Be Yourself. And there is a voice from, first I thought his mother, later turns out it's the mother of a friend of his, that just...
it's not even for him, right?
No, it's not for him.
Friend gave it to him.
Yeah. And she just said, don't do drugs when you go on college, be yourself. And so many young people getting addicted. And
Unless a doctor prescribes it,
yeah.
Then you can smoke weed. Because then it's regulated.
Also, something was that, well, should that be just a clear message, or is it irony, or is it both?
Considering all the drug references in the album, there's a lot of drug reference in the album. I thought it was kind of ironic placing. Or maybe, I don't know.
That's the thing.
Or just part of the story.
I think with Frank Ocean, it's usually both. It's again these both metals. I think on one, there is some truth in it, but there's some irony in it. And I think I don't know if he will ever, or yet, maybe he already said it, what this should mean, but it would fit how he, for him as an artist, to just set up, do whatever you want with that.
Well, yeah. We'll get into some other stuff about that later. I have a few ideas about it.
Oh, that's good.
Of why it could be both.
Mm-hmm.
Because of influences that he would have from the past.
And also something... this like this skits or interludes like this heavily used like in 90s hip hop
in
hip hop
very much.
That's the culture
and early 2000s hip hop.
That's the culture he also came from with the Odd Future gang of Tyler the Creator.
That's exactly what I was thinking of for the That was going to be my reference point.
That it has an influence. I think so.
I could see that influence going into it. Being the joke part of it coming from that. And then also maybe seriousness as well.
That's a good one. And then it goes into the song Solo. What I like here, it sounds so effortless and very minimalistic. Like, I think the whole album was kind of minimalistic and very on point.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
That's something I want to ask you, because from my ear, something we had it in another album too. I don't remember which one it was where I said, I think it's minimalistic. I said, whoa, that's not minimalistic. It was with Feist. So what do you think about it? But for me, it sounds like minimalistic and effortless. And with this organ in
really
the background. And I was waiting a little bit. Will here be a switch when he dials it up? But he don't.
And I guess I get what you mean.
But what I like is how he uses the word solo. How he sings it. And as you can say, it's solo. As I'm solo or solo. And how he sings it. How he uses the word, his voice. Something I liked. And then there's...
I liked the cleanness of the vocals on that track.
Yeah.
It was... Absolutely. For me, it felt like the first time where it was completely clean vocals on the album for...
Very crisp. Kind of
get to... Yeah, crisp and clean and just power.
Mm-hmm. And he really uses different voices of himself in that album. So it's like, as you say, like the first time that you hear this kind of voice. And he's talking in some interviews about it, that was also on purpose to use different voices. And at the next song, Skyline 2, I was sitting at home on my sofa on a Saturday, listening to the album, and then it was clear for me, kind of like, yeah, you and I, we're now friends. So that song, he also sings about summer. This is joy. This is summer. This album, it was like hanging out on the rooftop, having a look on the city on the summer, having very serious topics, but having also just fun topics. So serious and still laughing with a friend. And also, it's an album that makes me all over a little bit nostalgic. And again, like, and kind of melancholic, but still like something I like, again, something I like the mood, but still something it still gives me a good mood. I like to hang out with. And this track is that describes it quite well. For self-control, the song afterwards, I do not have that much thoughts. Was not on.
Really?
The one thought I had is, where's the other voice? Who is this other voice that is singing on the song? I haven't figured
it out.
It
was all him.
It was all him, right?
It was all him. Ah, wait, no. On the chorus of that, there's two other voices. There's Young Lean and Austin Feinstein.
Oh, okay.
Who's in Austin is a singer from the indie band Slow Hollows.
Mm.
He'd done stuff with Tyler the Creator before. And Young Lean is a Swedish rapper.
Yeah, and I thought
they did the chorus
for the other singer. That it maybe is the red line between Taylor Swift, the Taylor Swift album, and this one, because I thought it is maybe from Bon Iver, but it's not.
There was actually, that was a big thing. I don't know if it was this song or no, there's another song that people used to think was Bon Iver on this album, but it's actually Frank.
Okay.
There's a different song.
Did not found.
I'll have to find that. But there's some Bon Iver reference in this, or in the thoughts of this album as well. But you didn't have many thoughts on self-control. Did you like it?
Yeah, I like it, but I did not really find words for it, for whatever. Interesting for self-control, also the next one, for Good Guy. These are the songs I don't have really much notes on.
Good Guy, I just wrote, what is this?
I wrote kind of an interlude, kind of a skip.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of an interlude too.
That's the only thing I saw. It confused me.
Like, I was super confused by it.
But then,
and then we move on to Nights.
Yeah, very interesting song. It starts and it kind of let my thoughts go again and brings me kind of a good mood just from the all over sound. And then it really gets interesting at the 3 minute mark when I thought the song will be over.
Yeah, I thought it was over too.
And then there's a kind of a new song. And I then checked, listened to it on Spotify. My phone said, oh, it's still the song. And it then dials down. It has a totally different mood. But the second part I like a lot. Really, really good part. And afterwards, again, a little bit of the deep dive. At this song, at exactly 3 minutes and 30, I think, the album is exactly 30 minutes long. It's just...
Really?
Yeah. It's the cut. And then it has another 30 minutes because it's exactly 60 minutes.
Interesting. Very interesting. That's cool.
And again, and then, like having like two sides, it always came up for me. He wants to show different sides of emotions, of views, or whatever.
Yeah. Kind of the conflicting viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
I found that too.
And then there is on like the bridge to solo reprise the song that is also kind of, I felt, going back to his hip hop roots or the where he comes from. And immediately you get, okay, that's Andre 3000.
Yeah. When I first, I didn't look at any of the credits or anything ahead of time. And other than seeing, I don't even remember where, but I saw that Pharrell had done the one song. But when I heard that, it was, I mean, the guy has such an obvious voice.
Absolutely. And flow.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the greatest MCs, hip hop acts ever, I think, Outkast. They're such, so unique.
Yeah, for sure.
They're so good. To have him just for a short verse, yeah, that's just great.
But he was on the last album too.
Oh, okay.
He was on, that was his second thing. He did channel something on Pink Matter on Channel Orange.
And it also didn't surprise me because Henry 3000 also has a very arty aura about his work.
Yeah.
Same as Frank Ocean. So it's a good fit, I think. At the next song, Pretty Sweet, is it, I think?
Yep.
I like the sound, especially from the 1:50 mark. There's like almost like the live session make like a drum and bass style, something like that. Something I really liked about it. And this song reminded me of how great it is to listen carefully again to albums and songs. Same, like a little bit like for nights, if you just, you know, having a random playlist and you don't like nights from the first beginning, you will not hear the second part of it.
If yeah.
You just don't stick with it. And I was kind of reminded of that song too with the sound at the 1:50 mark. And after that song, it goes back again to a skit and a Facebook story from a guy with a French accent who tells a story that he...
French producer.
Yeah. Former girlfriend split up with him because he don't want befriended her on Facebook. And the funny thing is, this story was not recorded for the album. It was an actual conversation that was recorded in the studio.
Yeah, Frank just recorded randomly conversations that they would have.
Yeah, and then he used it for the album. But it totally sounds like
an awkward conversation.
Yeah.
So remember when you told that story the other day, I kind of recorded that and want to put it on the album. Is that okay?
Well, if he does that, then it's good. Or it's just on the album and you never...
Yeah, that
it.
Would be very awkward.
Yeah.
Listen to the album. Hey.
I would be surprised if Frank Ocean would do stuff like that.
That would be major legal issues.
Yeah, and as he is, also try to protect his art quite carefully. I think he will do it for others too. Then there's the song "White Ferrari," which remember
you missed "Close to You."
Oh, I missed "Close to You." Yeah. The first sound at that was the first song where I don't like the beginning and the first sound. I don't really like the production of his singing here.
I wrote down again with the vocal effects. That was the only thing I wrote down.
Yeah. So here it was, that was the first sound. I was like, not so much. But it changed with "White Ferrari." And just with the title, I remembered that I read that he's a super, super crazy car guy.
Mm-hmm.
And here again, this sound fits into the start of the album, like was this kind of a dreamy sound. And
it almost feels empty.
Huh, that's an interesting word. Yeah.
That's a minimalistic track.
Yeah.
I find.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. that it's really minimalistic.
He explored the space.
But I like it. Is it an emptiness you
I
like?
Liked it too. Yeah, I liked okay. it too. Yeah.
Yeah. It gives a lot of space. Yeah, also for the track. Actually, I think this was the song where some people thought that Bon Iver was involved. As I just see this on the notes. Okay. And then it gets really, really good for me. After Ride Ferrari, there is the song
Siegfried. That was the Bon Iver, Justin Vernon one.
White Ferrari, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Siegfried.
Siegfried, which is also like confusing, like Blonde. Like, you know, the album's named also on Spotify, Blonde with an E. On the cover, it's Blonde without an E. This song is named Siegfried, but it's spelled differently, like usually the name Siegfried. The E and the I are switched after the S. That confused me as a German. I don't know why.
How is it spelled in Siegfried and Roy?
Maybe it's also like spelled like this. Maybe that's the...
You keep talking and I'll look it up.
Yeah. And I like this song from the first to the last sound. This is a song I like we're talking about traveling. Next time I'm in a new city and it's a little bit dark outside and you can still see the lights, this is a song I will put on. Actually, I did also here in Bremen, walking in the evening, listening to that song. I have such a great, I like the guitar sound in the background, or however he produced it. And it reminded me at some other artist, and I could not recall to what artist later. I think I knew on the deep dive. There are very nice strings in this song.
Mm-hmm.
And no surprise, because involved in this song, and that maybe I like, that's something where I like it now even more now, is that Johnny Goodwin from the super, super great Radiohead was involved in that song. And I thought then also maybe with the all over production and the guitar, but he was assembling the strings. And I liked when he has the part at the 3 minute, 3:50 where he's like kind of talking. So after that highlight for me, it's get to Goodspeed. Is that correct?
Godspeed, isn't it?
Yeah, Godspeed. And this is then a more brighter, lighter sound again. It's more like when I talk with Siegfried, that's a song for the night. Godspeed is also something that I can listen to in the morning. Uses the organ quite well again. And at the end, I thought, well, is that a... Should that be like Whitney Houston singing? And then there's like, she sings, I Will Always Love You. So I don't know if that's a reference to Whitney Houston. Didn't find out. And
that's technically I'll Always Love You is technically a Dolly Parton song.
Oh, correct. But I remember.
But I don't think that it's anything to do with that.
Yeah, and I also don't know, but it first popped to mind, sounds like Whitney Houston, and then there's like, I Will Always Love You. And interestingly, for Futura 3, I don't have a lot of, not really a lot of thoughts. But what the first listening made me, I really wanted to listen to it more. I really enjoyed the first listening a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah. A lot.
little precursor to my, I don't have nearly as many notes as you. I did not like this album the first listening at all. At all.
That's not so surprisingly to me.
Really?
My guess would be that you only liked Pink and White as a song.
Oh, no. I had multiple likes.
And maybe the other part is, I don't know, maybe not too. You already laughed when I said melancholic, but something in the mood that you don't like?
No, I can't stand this. I couldn't stand the vocal effects through the whole album. It annoyed me so much. By like halfway through the album, I was basically my brain was shut off.
Okay.
Yeah. I did not like it at all. It annoyed me so much.
Not surprised, as I was more surprised that I liked the singing most of the time. So why do I like this?
When Nike started, I was like, seriously, Barrick, why did you pick this?
Yeah, that's
like, are you trying to torture me?
I'm surprised as well. So like, why do you like this song? So, but here we are.
So for Nikes, I had written down, it's a cool opening beat. It actually made me, the opening beat made me think of a basketball dribbling, which then kind of fit for me like Nikes.
And what
then I wrote
the reason why I like the song.
Yeah. And then the next thing I wrote was, I can't stand the vocal effect. Not digging this song at all. Started off nicely, then just disappointed. and that was before he switched to his normal voice.
And how do you like it then? I wrote
better vocals at the 3-minute mark. I hope it isn't a complete album of auto-tune.
It's not.
That was my opening thought after the first song. And then with Ivy, I had written down, it's better vocals, interesting flange on the guitar. I like that Ivy had kind of an empty, it was also, I found a minimalistic track. And it felt kind of bare and empty, which then made me think at the end, it's kind of fits with the context of the song. Because we're kind of like a bearing your soul kind of emotional song fit then with, or the lyrics at least, fit then with the song itself being kind of minimalistic and just completely open. Pink and White, it was very cool. It sounded kind of like 90s R&B for me.
Yeah.
And then
it's a good one.
I like the guitar. Background harmony. This is before I knew it was Beyonce. I was like, oh, really good background harmonies.
Surprise.
Surprise, surprise. He had a lot of nature noises through the album, didn't he? Did you notice that?
No.
In Pink and White, there's like bird noises in the background.
Oh, yeah, that makes it.
This is why when you said it's minimalistic, I was like, there's like weird random noises.
Maybe that's why I
everywhere
think it has a special mood and vibe that comes from this nature sounds. It's
actually, I seriously took out my earbuds at one point and was like, am I imagining this to see if I could hear birds without the earbuds in to see if it was
that's good.
Me or just if it was actually there. Be Yourself. It's an interlude, not much to say. Found it kind of funny. Solo. I wrote down, what's with the whistle? So apparently there's a whistle there. I'll have to listen to it again.
That's so great. You hear so many things with your, I would say, professional voice. Ear that I don't hear, and when I listen next time, okay, there it is.
And with Skyline, I thought it feels like a jazz number almost, which I found cool. And Skyline, I actually liked from the beginning. I like the interesting effects at the beginning. I thought there it sounded like they had a theremin at some point. Do you know what a theremin is?
No.
It's like this, it does like a wobbly noise. It's like this thing, and they, you run your hand along the by the side of it. Like you don't even touch it, but it gives like this wobbly waving sound. Self-control. I didn't like the voice at the beginning. Then I wrote that it has a bit of a Motown feel to the guitar. And it made me think of the guitar riff from My Girl.
Oh, yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Good guy. Like I said, I just wrote, what is this? Knights has a sad face from me from the first listen. I thought that it sounded too much like a Drake song at some points. It made me think of Drake.
That's not good.
I didn't like it. Then Solo Reprise, I just wrote down that I found it kind of interesting. Pretty Sweet, I didn't like. I thought it sounded super chaotic to start. Halfway through the song, I didn't like it at all. Cool Pickup at the end, I wrote. Facebook Story, I wrote, I don't get why he has all the interludes. Close to You, I was just getting super annoyed by the vocal effects by then. So I just wrote again with the vocal effects.
It
distracted me from everything.
This song, I also don't like the production, as mentioned.
White Ferrari, I really liked. I thought it showed off his voice a lot. And it had more of the interesting background noises at the end of the song. Siegfried, I just wrote down that it sounds really really experimental.
That's a good word.
And Godspeed, I liked the gospel feeling. And at the I found there was background noises in Godspeed that sounded like old like Nintendo games.
Yeah.
Like an old like 16-bit game cartridge music. And then Futura Free, I just put three dots. I didn't really get that song at all.
Okay, as you, we both don't have a lot to say about that in the first listening, at least.
No, I wasn't digging Futura Free.
So what was your favorite song from the first listening?
Pink and White.
Yeah. Okay.
Not my favorite song now, though.
Yeah, it changed for me also, I have to say. But as mentioned, my first favorite song was also Pink and White.
And I have to admit, I did actually, after when I first heard it, I was like, this album's like a 3 out of 10. And I knew that it was highly rated everywhere, and I thought I may have to reconsider taking anything that Rolling Stone magazine says seriously.
And Pitchfork.
And like everything, this was like
super
big. That just shows you first listens can be deceiving.
Or maybe it is just, you know, what you think, but the opinion of others just changed your mind so much.
It's not opinions of others that changed my mind. It's an interview with the artist that changed my mind.
Ah, yeah. Even better.
Where he explained the writing process.
Yeah, and then
what he tries to do. And then it gave me a different way of listening to the album, and that helped.
But
a lot.
That is quite good, because for the deep dive, then I would suggest I will tell a little bit about the artist first. And then you can guide us a little bit through the process about this. So, Frank Ocean, born and raised in New Orleans.
Not born.
No, not born. Okay.
He's born in Long Beach,
California. Yeah. And then he moved to
Then he moved when he was really little.
Really little to New Orleans. His father left the family quite early, and he was raised by his mother and his grandfather, basically.
Yeah.
And then he was like a little bit of a silent loner, as described. There's a quote from him. He never really was involved in team sports. Because he said from the beginning sound crazy to make a team sports when you know you can't be the very best in the team, and he knew so. And he take a lot of time and into music. And
that fits with who he met up with when he later moved to California, back to California.
Yes,
because Tyler the Creator is the exact same way.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I know. Just I like to listen to Tyler the Creator, but I do not so much know about the history of it. But this is maybe the most important artists that he met for getting his potential out as a gateway. Basically, he left New Orleans after Katrina, or while Katrina happened, right?
After his all of his recording gear got destroyed.
Yeah, and then he had
he left
a short time in Houston before going allegedly with only 1,100 bucks to Los Angeles to.
That would be horrible living there with that little amount of money.
And try to make connection in music, and that didn't really work out. He worked just to get by. And then he kind of figured out that maybe the best part is not to make your own music from the beginning, but write music for others.
Yeah.
And then he wrote already songs or helped writing songs for big stars like John Legend and Justin Bieber.
And I think Rihanna as well.
And also Rihanna, yeah. So
big, big names.
Big, big names.
You can see him with John Legend, the kind of soulful R&B thing works. I was a bit surprised by Bieber.
Yeah, totally. And also how he managed to find this connection to get then from not getting really discovered as an artist, but then writing songs for such big artists.
Yeah, for major artists.
Major artists. But because of that process, he got in connection with the producer. I don't have the name. The producer from Rihanna's Umbrella and Beyonce's Single Ladies. I don't know what the name.
Oh, I had that somewhere. But yeah.
But he made the connection for him to Def Jam.
The Def Jam.
And though he got signed by Def Jam 2009, but was on hold. So there was no money for any production.
Was that when, wasn't Jay-Z president at Def Jam for a while?
That I also wanted to check. Because he was president of Def Jam. I'm not sure if he not already stepped down in 2009.
Because that would be a huge mess up by Jay-Z.
True, but later Jay-Z helped his career.
Yeah, that's what confused me, because I thought that was kind of around the time that he was.
I think it was earlier. I think.
Was it earlier that he was?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I think.
2004, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. And at that time, he met Tyler, the Creator, and the Odd Future Wolfgang Kill Them All crew. And
those guys are nuts.
Yeah, really nuts. That helped him really becoming his own artist. Yeah, then he created a mixtape that got a lot of buzz.
That was Nostalgia,
yeah,
right?
Nostalgia. And
that was the one that got buzz with Jay-Z.
Yeah.
And Beyonce. I saw an interview with Beyonce about that.
I saw it too. Where she really said, like, who's that artist? And she said, that's Frank Ocean. And she said, bring him on next flight. And they actually did that. And they recorded like 5 tracks. And she ended that interview with like, this guy's the truth. Well, that is really
something. Yeah, that he got on with some pretty big names in the hip hop community, hip hop R&B community.
Yeah.
Pretty early.
And another big part was, again, Jay-Z and Kanye West, because Kanye West then also listened to the mixtape, and Kanye West was recording the album Watch the Thrones with Jay-Z.
Yep.
So they also invited Frank Ocean, and he's featured on the great song No Church in the Wild.
I think that was the first time I ever heard Frank Ocean was on that.
Same for me.
Because I remember that song and being like, that's really good.
Yeah. Anyway, great song. And also in Made It in America. Awesome. Good song. And also a very, very good album. I like that.
You forgot something about his mixtape, though.
Yeah, then.
He was technically signed to Def Jam at that point. They weren't doing anything with him. So he recorded the mixtape on his own and released it on his favorite social media platform, Tumblr, for free. Everyone could get that album for free when it came out. And he said there's no Def Jam on it because they had nothing to do with it. So that's why.
Yeah, and he also said that would not happen without the Tyler, the Creator and Odd Future crew.
Yeah, they showed him that he can do it on his own.
Yes.
That he doesn't actually need a label out there to tell him what to do. He could just do it.
Yes. And then because of this buzz and because of this mixtape and because of Beyonce and Jay-Z and Kanye West celebrate this guy, of course, Def Jam said, now you get your album. And he said, well, give me $1 million and give me all the freedom I want.
And they did.
They did. And he created the album, Channel Orange.
Can you imagine how much trouble that A&R, his A&R guy would be getting into?
Wow.
The heads of Def Jam were like, what did you do?
A lot.
We could have had this.
Crazy. And yeah, then Channel Orange happened and got immediately big buzz. What also was a very big buzz that just a couple of weeks ahead of the release of Channel Orange, I think again on Tumblr, he released a letter in which he described that first love of his life was a man.
Yeah.
Which is basically never happened before in the close to hip-hop, R&B, soul community, not as I can recall.
No.
Because it's historically...
It's very macho.
Macho and homophobic. And that was, of course, something very big. I remember that Jay-Z immediately also released kind of a letter and supported him, which was great. And which that was really, really a very big thing. That was...
it's a big step.
Yeah, a very big step. And he handled something that's very special, I think. As I see it, as I read it, this is, of course, something that will always be tied to him. And it's something very brave and great what he did there. But still, I think he's just seen especially as a great artist, which is very hard to do. And not just be labeled as the guy who came out about that.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's something very, very remarkable, I think.
And I think he opened some doors in that community.
Yes.
Because Tyler, the Creator, came out afterwards as well.
Yeah, and there's like very well fitting. You mentioned it before. There are a lot of videos with songs of him. They're not officially music videos of him. There's one from Siegfried with scenes from the movie Moonlight, which also hits that topic, kind of.
Yeah.
So that fits quite well. And Channel Orange, well, I first read about this album at the end of this year, 2012, because it was named also Album of the Year of, for example, Rolling Stone.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. And then there was like a period of 4 years where he basically was not in social life scene. So he kind of disappeared. And he was totally celebrated with Channel Orange. He won Grammys. Yeah, I think great record sales, all that stuff. Usually now you would think he would be very more all over there with, I don't know, features on Beyonce or whatever, great artists. But he kind of disappeared for 4 years, which built the myth up even bigger about his as an artist.
Totally, totally.
Absolutely. And as described, he was like felt worn down by the industry, by the pressure of Def Jam. He was thinking about retiring immediately from music, he said in interviews. And then he fought for getting out of his contract to be just as free as an artist as it gets.
He paid for to get his own masters back.
Yes. And he had still on his contract, I think, when I studied correctly, he had to produce at least one album for Def Jam, even more.
Yep.
And that is also... And,
how did he screw them over? A
great move by him. So he flew to London into Abbey Road Studios, started recording. Later recorded also in the Electric Lady Studio. Is that the name of New York? Very famous one.
Yeah, I think so.
And Los Angeles. And then he, in 2015, he announced that there will be an album and an art project with the name Boys Don't Cry. But still then, 1 year later, then on one point, there is like a 40-minute album, Endless, a visual album by him, credited officially a Def Jam album. And people said, well, there it is. There is the Frank Ocean album, right?
Only available online.
Only available online.
On iTunes Music.
And then just the next day, he released Blonde on his own under the label name Boys Don't Cry.
And with the magazine Boys Don't Cry, and with a new commercial for Nike with his song Nikes.
Yeah.
That is some good planning.
Very, very good planning. And said, well, thanks, Def Jam. I'm out.
Yeah. He'd probably get along very well with Taylor Swift with all that planning.
Yeah. But maybe they're best friends. They just don't show it in the outside world, which would also fit quite well. Yeah, that was a quite cool move. Have you seen that that video, that visual album?
No.
I watched the old creation. It's a black and white one, and you see 40 minutes people, including him, building a staircase, a wooden staircase. So when at the very last song, he just goes up the stair and then he's gone. By Def Jam.
And is it good?
I think it's quite good. The end is quite crazy. Sounds like an 80s strange techno sound or whatever. But it's pretty cool. It's not like it's just fun music. So it's really serious music.
Mm-hmm. He's actually, the more I listened to his music, I found it more and more leaning more away from R&B and more into the experimental jazz area. That was a big thing for me as I listened further and further, or more and more.
Yes, and stories like this intrigue me so much more about the album and the all over process. But maybe you can go deep into that. What did you find out about the process of the album?
I actually found an interview with the engineer of the album, Jeff Ellis, where he actually talks about the whole recording process.
That's cool, because I...
Which was pretty neat.
Don't know it.
Actually, it's pretty funny how the guy became... He engineered both of the albums, both of the major albums for Frank. And what happened was that the engineer... So what the engineer does is they just kind of sit there and record, and someone else mixes it. But this guy, Jeff Ellis, did the actual recording, would get the mics out and place the mics and make sure that everything sounded the way it should sound. And so how he got the gig is pretty interesting. He was working in the studio where they were recording the, what's it called?
Channel Orange.
Channel Orange, where they were recording Channel Orange. And one day the engineer just didn't show up and he was the assistant. So they're like, okay, you're engineering it now. And Frank was like, okay, cool. And Jeff was like, okay, I've never engineered an album before. Good. So like not as the head engineer, he was always like assistant. And so that was his first time being the head engineer.
Wow.
And straight up with this highly anticipated Frank Ocean album. And what's interesting is he records freeform. He has no set guidelines. Okay, today we're going to record this and then this and then this and then this. He just goes in the studio and kind of does his thing and that's it. So.
Like a jazz musician.
Like a jazz. Yeah. Like freeform jazz. And it made him, he said, working with Frank actually made him learn how to think like an artist. Because when you're the engineer, you think very technical. We need to place the microphone here. We need to do this. We need to do this. He said, but when you work with an artist like Frank, who is very much an artist, not like a technical person, you have to think differently to record it because he thinks differently. So it made someone who was normally a very technical person actually open up creatively, which I thought that was pretty cool. And he said the only secret to Frank is that his voice is amazing. Because the big question was, how do you get Frank's voice to sound so good? And he's like, the only secret to Frank's voice is that Frank's voice is just, it's just amazing.
It's just good.
Okay. It's just good. And he actually uses a German microphone. The Neumann U47.
Okay. Never heard about it, but...
Neumann's a huge company here. They're very expensive mics. They're very good.
Where are they from in Germany? I have to check this.
I don't know. Probably somewhere in the south. And nowadays everyone uses plugins, right? So all the effects are done digitally for the most part. And the first recording that they did together, it was all kind of, they just used basic plugins because they weren't sure from studio to studio what you would get. So with Blonde, what happened was that Frank actually got his own computer with different plugins installed so they could take it from studio to studio and could actually experiment more and just kind of play around because they could actually bring everything then with them.
So
to again, continue to...
experimental.
Which, yeah, when I heard that, I was like, that makes sense then for the experimental feeling that the album has. Even my wife Yurtis actually said, this sounds really, really experimental.
Mm-hmm.
She also thought I wouldn't like it.
Did she like it?
She hasn't heard the whole thing yet.
Okay.
She'll listen to it though, because she won't listen to our podcast until she hears the actual album that we're talking about. That's why she still hasn't heard the Taylor Swift podcast. She's heard the album many times now, but 2 hours is long.
Yeah.
And one big thing for me in the research process that changed how I had to listen to this was an interview that I saw of, he doesn't do that many interviews, right? Like, no. I could barely find any interviews, but I found one video interview with the BBC from like 2012.
So 4 years before Blonde.
4 years before Blonde, where he said that he's inspired to tell stories and believes that stories can be delivered well through music. But he was saying he considers himself a visual artist. So when he's making music, he tries to make a photograph out of things that you can't physically see. So he's basically trying to paint a picture in your mind with his songs, with the music, so with the sound that he's using. He's trying to paint a picture that you physically can't see, but he's has something in mind that he wants you to see. And so when I heard that, I was like, okay, this kind of makes me have to re-listen to the whole album with kind of that in mind, trying to see like in every song kind of a picture and then maybe even an overall picture.
That's very good.
Overall picture was kind of afterwards easy to see. It's kind of an album about relationships.
Yeah.
But where he looks at then both sides of it, I found, like you had talked about earlier.
About relationships especially, and all that comes with it. Relationships, drugs also. Some addiction, but yeah, absolutely right.
Comes great, Nick, ties in with a clip from High Fidelity. Do we have great music? Do we have great pop music because of heartbreak, or do we have heartbreak because of great pop music?
That's so good.
I also found out about the obsession with expensive cars, where that came from.
From a magazine,
his
right?
Uncle, from a magazine that I think it was his uncle gave him like a subscription 1 year for Christmas to like this high, like super high-end magazine where all it was like bling and like Bugattis and stuff like that. And he became obsessed with it.
Well, that makes sense. As a little kid, you always got these super nice magazines. I would become a car buff too.
Yeah, it's what you get as a kid when you're impressionable. I used to get hockey cards from my grade 2 teacher, and now I'm obsessed with hockey.
Yeah. So beware what.
Before that, I didn't even know hockey existed.
What magazines you give to your daughters?
So cool it on the Disney stuff. Another thing I found with the album, with the research, was the video for Nikes has, it's not the song in the video isn't the same as the on the record.
Yes, there are three versions.
It has double vocals on the video version. That version actually made me like the song Nikes after I watched the video version and heard the two contrasting voices. It kind of, I don't know why he wouldn't put that on the album then, because it kind of made me understand the album a bit better, getting the two contrasting points of view on the very first song. I feel might have opened up the album more.
Maybe that's
where people actually get it.
Attention. Maybe he wants, as he said, he's a visual artist. Maybe there's only one video. That's the first song. Maybe he wants to build the bridge that there is only this one video, and that helps to bring yourself into that visual part of the sound and what it means. So that
he also had made a video for the entire album right before that.
Yeah.
So the whole album was a video. Maybe he was just tired of making music videos. But yeah, I can see where you're going for, where you're coming from with that. The rest was kind of just that I found was more interviews with other people and lots of stuff about when kind of the relationship with Tyler, the Creator, which made me do it then a deep dive on Tyler, the Creator.
Oh, that's also a cool one. What I think that what also immediately made me think that this is a special talent is stuff like the interviews Beyoncé, and then just figure out what kind of artists are involved in that album. We just mentioned like Beyoncé is there uncredited. Pharrell is producing a song. Then I figured out that on Ivy, for example, involved is one of the guys from Vampire Weekend and Jamie XX from the XX. So that's like Vampire Weekend, the XX are one of the biggest indie bands in the last decade, I would say.
Yeah.
I said, wow, okay, now I get the sound that why I thought it sounds a little bit indie. And then I figured out that there's the artist A-Track that he tweeted like before the album was released that you will listen this year to a song with the name White Ferrari and will be the best song that you will listen all year. And like the guy from Vampire Weekend and just immediately retreated. Yeah, that's for sure.
There were so many little tweets going on from other artists that were little. He had to have approved it all because of how secretive the guy is about all of his music.
Yes.
But like with Nikes, there was a tweet too from Chance the Rapper's on July 31st, 2015, where Chance the Rapper just wrote, "These bitches want Nike."
2015.
Yeah.
It's 1 year before this song was released.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all these guys were hearing stuff from it ahead of time and were like, "This is amazing."
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It's really cool.
And just having that much respect from kind of the people that you work with.
After one album only, right? It's after like one album, like he was like for 10 years in the business. But there's some talents,
which kind of like Nas.
Yes, that was what I wanted to mention. Like Nas was from the beginning, everybody was so into like, oh, this guy is just special. Seems like it's the same for Frank Ocean.
Yep.
So I was really,
it's not the big bidding war,
stunned that like, wow, there's a guy, Jamie XX, Vampire Week, and Radiohead, guys from Radiohead, involved in that album. That means something about also the process. And seems like not only they respect him as an artist, but they also want to, they like working with him the process.
Like want to work with him.
Yeah. And that's quite cool. And I was just when I read surprised, but when I then thought about the sound, not so much that like one of the main influence for this album for him, he said, was the Beach Boys and Brian Eno.
And the Beatles.
And the Beatles. He uses part of the Beatles in White Ferrari.
They're even credited.
Yeah, they are credited.
And they're right, they have writing credits in it.
And
you know what though, with like the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson, songwriter that struggles with fame.
Yes.
Fits.
Absolutely.
With Frank Ocean, very much, very similar.
And also very critically acclaimed. Yeah. And in the last top 500 albums of all time, the Pet Shop from the
Beach Boys.
Pet Sounds.
Pet Sounds, not Pet Shop. The Pet Shop Boys are a different band. But Pet Sounds band. Is...
And I think...
Second place, right?
Smiley Smile is up there as well, and that's the album just by Brian Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the album that everyone waited for forever.
Also fits to man, Blonde.
Also kinda. Fits.
Quite good. And like other artists like James Blake, kind of big artists that were involved. Have you found out there is stories that it's not credited on the album, but like month later it was somewhere written down and something half officially from Frank Ocean that on White Ferrari, one of the co-writers or producer was Kanye West.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that. It would like I was actually a little bit surprised that there was no Kanye stuff on the album because of how much he had worked with Kanye. Like a lot.
And for such a big anticipated album, I was also surprised. But that makes sense that, and especially on a song called Ride Ferrari that fits also to Kanye. Yeah, so
Tyler the Creator, of course.
There were also rumors that Kendrick Lamar was involved in one song. But not officially.
Maybe it's just becoming with how secretive he is. Maybe people just kind of start adding names that they think it would be cool if they were involved.
But he makes it very smart. First of all, he does not talk a lot. I think the only interview he gave was for New York Times after the album.
I think so, yeah.
And that's it.
Very secretive guy. That falls into something that I... In our little section of effect on the industry, or... if the album has an effect or will have an effect. Maybe we should jump into that right now because that last comment kind of goes straight into that, I find. The effect of this album on the industry, there's kind of two things that I find go with it. The do-it-yourselfness. I could see more people trying to do that. There was the whole era of as soon as Pro Tools came out, people were trying to do more and more and more just on their own to skip out the studio. More people realized, no, we need a studio, but maybe this makes people understand that they honestly don't need a record label.
Mm-hmm.
If you're good, you don't really need it.
And that's the other part. Then the chances are higher than you really getting... when you're really good, because you don't have a high-class producer that just, I don't know, makes you sound good or something like that.
But he has producers working with him, though.
Yeah, a lot of producers. Also
high-end ones. But I think with the... You can tell with this album that it's very much he's doing what he wants to do.
Yes.
And... I think that might be a complaint from many artists. When you're working for a record label, or when you're signed to a record label, you kind of have to do what they tell you.
One of the biggest struggles as a young artist.
If they want a specific song to be the single and you don't think it's the single, well, guess what? It's the single.
Yeah, correct. And usually you're not that experienced. You're a very young person coming into that. And you need a strong backbone or a great manager or whatever to really stand up against this.
He even fired, Frank Ocean fired all his management, everyone.
All the
lawyer, management, yeah. Everyone.
All of them after Channel Orange, which was a massively hit.
Yeah.
And it seems like he already had a lot of freedom in that process, but he still, it was just not a circumstance that he liked. He wanted like all of the possible freedom, which he fought for silently for 4 years. Worked out quite great. And since then, 4 years again in the making. There was no other album since then.
He has some singles out now, though.
Some singles, and but not an album.
No album. But so to go back on the thought, I could see that having a bit of an effect. But I think it's also more of a thing where you have to be a good artist for that to even work.
Yeah. Correct.
If you're a mediocre artist, or not even good, you have to be great. Like, he even has, like, with how much hype he had and how much backing he had from other major artists, I don't think it's not really that much of a wonder that this album, with him doing all the, with it being his label, no majors involved, he could push it as much as he wanted or not.
Yeah, that's correct.
And he kind of built up the hype machine himself. So it works well with him being a great musician, great artist, but then also with having the hype from all the other artists. Very calculated.
But very good calculated. Absolutely.
And
but when it comes to this, there's really a lot of things that fits to what we talked about Taylor Swift. Both highly professional, both calculated, both very, very serious about their art. Very important. The storytelling on very different ways and what's behind it, it's very important to them.
That was a big thing on my second, on my further listenings, was listening more to the storytelling. And that had a huge, huge effect on it.
Yes, and it's really something I still have to go deeper to it, but that's again something really great about the album. You can go way deep into it.
I could see the album having a huge effect on future artists. Also with the, maybe not just from this album, but just Frank Ocean as a artist in general, how little he is on social media and in the public eye compared to other musicians. I think that's more of a personal thing for him, though. Like, I don't think it's calculated at all. I think he just doesn't want to have to deal with it. Because he's built up a mystery. There's the mystery of Frank Ocean, basically.
Absolutely. What is he doing? And what is coming next? What is he thinking? Whatever.
It's also like, who is Frank Ocean, basically?
Who is he? Yeah.
Like, with the amount of, with how much contact your average fan has to their favorite musicians nowadays, or how close they can get to that person's life, quote unquote. Real life, whether or not it's actually the real life that you're seeing on social media and everything, is another question. But he doesn't even bother with any of that. And that's then another thing that I could see affecting future artists. Whether they're genuine with it or not is another question. You could see some people trying just to capture kind of the mysterious vibe that he has. And I don't know that it would work for me, even work for other people.
Yeah, there need to be a couple of circumstances come together. I think for him, there was such a big buzz from his letter and Channel Orange for him as an artist. And then this complete silence. in advance with the buzz of that he was like in so praised by Kanye, Jay-Z, Beyonce, and then here he is, he's at the Grammys and all that part, and then a bam, he's gone. So if you're not so big and especially from the critically acclaimed, and then just be silent, then you're just silent. So you need to hit a certain level already to make it more mystique, I think.
Mm-hmm. That was actually, now that you mentioned the Grammys, another thing with Blonde. He didn't even put it in for the...
Yes.
Didn't even put it in as an application for the Grammys.
He said, no, thanks.
Said that the Grammys don't represent the people he's trying to reach.
Yeah. And that's interesting, but a lot of people say just, yeah, okay, I won the Grammy, I don't go. But he said, you don't, no, just don't put me in there. I just, you don't have to give me the prize in advance.
I don't want it.
Yeah.
Well, he'd already won one, didn't he?
Yeah, and he was there. So.
And he was there.
But then after, especially after, that was for Channel Orange, and after that process, immediately, there was this time when he started, I want more freedom. And yeah. Maybe I'm quitting as an artist or whatever.
More freedom, and I don't want to be in the public eye as much.
Yeah. Worked quite well for him.
That it did.
So now, describe me how it changed your second listening. Or third, fourth, whatever.
All previous listenings. Well, I had read also about the pitchy voices. Did you read about anything about that?
What I read was that he, in the New York Times interview, really underlines that it was important for him to use different voices to show, like, for example, one song, it was important for him to, he was really angry, but he said, well, but this song, it's here forever, and maybe that shouldn't be just only the angry voice. So I use also a different one, a more reflective one, that it has part of the storytelling and like these all over feeling that you can have also sometimes different feelings at the same time, that the, he wants to put this out. That's what I read.
I read that some of the pitch shifts in the voice were also to represent different times in his life.
Hmm.
So when it goes to the higher pitched, it's actually meant to represent childhood or more innocence. So then it made me kind of listen to that differently. I'm not focused, which I was doing before, so much on the actual effect, but then the use of the effect in the storytelling.
Yes. And exactly this, what you described, make me thinking, and I think I read it somewhere else, that for example, especially for Nikes, you have these high pitched voice and the low pitched voice, that the high pitch is the young aesthetic version that is more drawn to this hedonistic, materialistic life. And the other pitch, the lower pitched voice, is the more reflective side of that.
Do you mean from the video where they're kind of going over top of each other? Or do you mean where it goes back to his just normal
both.
Voice?
And because of the video, it's getting even more clearer, but also in verse one and two.
But in the video, I found when it was the deeper voice, it wasn't more reflective. It, like in the video, he's like, no pick. In the video, the voice was actually reflective of Fight Club. Because it was, you know, this first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. Second rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. And in the video, it's the first rule is no pictures. Second rule is no pictures at the club or at the party. And I found that for me wasn't reflective at all. That was more kind of the almost aggressive voice to it compared to the light kind of spacey, oh, I'm just having fun kind of vibe from the
the more
pitched up version.
Maybe not reflective in this case, not the right word, but still more aggressive, but more serious.
serious kind of street.
Yeah, that's the better description. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it made me so like I said with about the video, that the video made me listen to Nike completely differently. Where before I couldn't stand the song, and now I actually like it.
Okay, now you really like it. Okay, that's
I good. Actually like it. Like I keep walking around the, like I was in Berlin on the weekend for work and kept walking around singing "The Bitches Want Nikes."
I have to say, when I'm checking now Spotify, it's one of the most, in the top three of the most listened songs all this year.
This year?
Yeah.
For you or for me. In general?
No, for me.
Okay.
And he refers in the video to the 90s called Heaven's Gate. Have you found this?
Yep. With the shoes. And blankets, yeah.
A cult that committed suicide together, wearing the same outfit with Nike Decade sneakers. Yeah, and he's wearing that outfit in the video.
He's also laying on a bed covered with a white sheet, which is how they found all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. The second listening then also made me way more appreciate self-control, because there also it has that pitched up voice at the beginning as well of self-control, which I didn't really like the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
But then afterwards, that's now become my favorite song.
Oh, that is
a surprise. I really, really like self-control. Where at my first listen, I wrote, it's all right, but it's nothing special.
And what exactly made it now for you the favorite song?
I really like the vocals at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That I really, really like. But just in general, I really like the song.
Okay.
Maybe it's also the Motown feeling playing into it, because I love Motown.
Yeah. But I thought it would not be the favorite song of you. That's
really? What did you think would be my favorite after further listening? Still Pink and White?
Yeah, Pink and White would be the main guess. And maybe White Ferrari.
No, I like both of them, but sticking with self-control. What do you like now after further listening, or what did further listening do for you?
It's so about the favorite song now, it's a very, very hard pick. As mentioned, the first one was Pink and White, very clearly. Now this year, one of the most listened songs is Nikes.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, really right now, on the heavy rotation, my favorite song is Siegfried.
I have to listen to that again.
I like it so much, the all-over sound. And even more, what really has an effect how I like this music is the visual part, not only the one in my brain, but the videos that are out there that people are doing to that songs. There's one that is like 9 minutes long. It's just animated, like some Japanese enemy part but I think it's quite cool. There's this section or Siegfried with scenes from the movie Moonlight. There's one with the lyrics and some nature on it. And it catches in so many different ways the mood so good that makes me just enjoy it more.
One thing that also changed my listening for further listenings, the first listen I did was in the middle of the afternoon one day. And then I was watching a few different videos about it afterwards. And this one guy who reviewed the album said, for him, it's an album you have to listen to at nighttime, just chilling somewhere. And so then the next time I listened to it, it's like, well, okay. I listened to it once during in the middle of the day, chilling, just sitting on the couch. But it's like maybe being dark outside and just kind of the darker feeling of nighttime will have a different effect. Totally did.
Absolutely. For this album, it has so much effect when you're listening to it. I think too. And for me, it's like a great summer album, an urban album. Yeah.
and Nighttime album too.
Yeah. So when it comes to this, I think it would start with Pink and White when the sun is going down, and then the rest is a Nighttime album.
Yeah, but Nike though is also like Nighttime because it's about clubbing. Yeah,
absolutely.
Going out.
There is another video also on YouTube. I don't know if that's from a movie. I don't know because it's super high produced. Where some girls,
two girls.
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought first it was the official one.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And it catches super good the vibe of the song, I think.
I thought it was the official one until I started seeing things about the official video having like him in it. And I was like, I did not see Frank Ocean anywhere in that video.
Same for me. What? That was not the official one? And that made it for me even better. And another thing that makes me still so curious about that album, I cannot remember when an artist had this crossover between that soul singing that he can do. I mean, he uses so many different ways of how he sings, and this crossover between so many influences. It's like it's very 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 special for me to describe.
He jumps around a lot.
Yeah, but on a very good way, and it's so hard to describe. Yeah. You cannot really put it in a category. Just like the first thing I would say, it's just like really arty, but still something very arty, but still something that you can consume so easily. I would say because a lot of times you see it's arty, but it's hard to consume. You think it's good, but you cannot listen so much to it. And here is something I think, wow, that's very arty. It's going deep. The feelings he's describing, or you just have in your picture, they were so honest. I think it feels so honest, but still, it's something that you can really. It's easy to consume.
On my further listens to it, the more I listened to it, I kept thinking we have this music festival here in Hamburg called Uber Jazz, and I kept thinking this is like music that you would. The good music you hear at Uber Jazz, where it's a combination of a bunch of different genres, sometimes with a bit of a jazzy feel, sometimes not. I actually started wondering if he'd ever actually been there, but it wouldn't. He's been so big from the very beginning that it wouldn't have made sense.
Yeah, but that's, again, this jazzy part, I think it's good. And what I can see, and that maybe is also a little bit ahead of what will be H the Best, or I think I can see totally people that are usually mostly listening to hip hop or soul and listening to this album saying, I like these other influences. I can totally see people that have nothing to do with soul or hip hop, like listening to indie music, listening to the album said, wow, I like this one. And myself, there's influences like, you know, or techniques he uses, like maybe it's not the word bad autotune, but like high pitching voice, and I'm confused why I like this. So this is something that I can see quite good.
I think if you listen to it more than one time, I think it ages well. For people that don't listen to this genre of music very often. But like last night when I was driving back from Berlin, I was in the car with three colleagues and I put this album on. The colleagues listened to classic rock, metal, and the other guy, I don't really know. I know I have colleagues that would like it, but these three, they listened to Nikes, and I had to turn it off after Nikes. They were like, what is this? Why did you put this on, Trevor? I'm like, it's really good. I'm like, no, it's not. I'm like, I thought that too. You just have to listen to it more. And they're like, we're not listening to this for the next 2 hours.
But you're right. Again, it is something you have to listen more. Again, it's an album that you just have to go deep into.
And yeah, you really have to hear it more than one time to actually appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Do you did you manage to find anything for your new segment from the last show? What did Chuck say?
No, unfortunately not. I have so much what Chuck is saying about the next album I will pick, but not about Frank Ocean. Maybe because Frank Ocean doesn't speak so much that it's also why Chuck Losterman said, well, I leave it there.
But maybe he just couldn't get an interview.
Yeah. And or maybe he's just not into Frank Ocean.
Maybe. I couldn't find anything either. So I decided to do a different version of what did Chuck say? And I did what did Lily say, being my oldest daughter. So I'm going to play for you now what Lily liked about the album in an interview she did this evening. Lily, what did you think of Frank Ocean?
It is good.
Yeah? What song did you like?
Pink and the Squeaky Wife.
Pink and White and the one with the squeaky voice.
Yeah.
What did you like about the squeaky voice?
That it's so squeaky.
Did it sound funny?
Yes.
And why did you like Pink and White?
Because it's pink.
Yeah. Good. So very, very good album reviews. I like the one with the squeaky voice because it's a squeaky voice. And I like Pink and White because pink. Also a way to win over fans. Squeaky voice and pink.
Just put pink into it.
So, Beric, what would you give the album? At most places, it got I think the lowest score I saw was like an 8 or an 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
I mean, most places, it's considered like 4.5 out of 5, 9 star, 10 star. Like,
so critically acclaimed, as said, maybe the most critically acclaimed in the last 10 years. For me, it's an 9. I think it's a 9. It's really high rate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just to describe it, before we started this recording, I liked that process so much. I was still listening to videos, and I was a little bit late because I just listened to it again. So it's and it is also because it really has an impact what other artists. They are working with him, what is he saying about it? It really is shaping my view also about it. But I really, really like it. And I like that it's an album that I always discover new things. It's maybe kind of really, there's so many parallels between the last two albums we discussed, just not from the style, but how we both refer to it. So maybe it's my, what for you is Taylor Swift and Folklore, for me, it's Frank Ocean and Blonde.
For me, I couldn't stand the album the first time around until I saw the interview with Frank himself. It was getting probably a 3 out of 10 for me.
That's a very low score.
I didn't like it at all. After the interview and listening, kind of understanding what he shoots for with his writing, I gave it another listen. And with the further listens, I'd probably give it a 7 or an 8.
Wow, that's...
There's still some songs on it that I don't like, but probably an 8. Because it is...
Wow.
Yeah, an 8. So a big jump.
That is a very big jump.
From not liking it at all to actually... I even told my wife this evening, I was like, I actually kind of like this album now.
That's cool. And again, shows what really can change in so many ways when you're going deeper into subjects, especially with music.
And just listening more than one time.
Yes.
think that's with lots of music. There's stuff you don't like at first, but then if you listen to it again and kind of pay more attention.
Yes. I can recommend this for all kinds of art. It's not only for music, especially for music. If you have a great book, read it a couple of times. And it, for really good books, or also depending maybe on the topic, it can make books better. It can movie makes. It's worth watching very good deep movies a couple of times or TV shows.
Although reading a book that you don't like the first time might be a bit difficult.
Well, that is weird.
This book gets a 2 out of 10. I'm going to read it again.
Yeah. But if you want to read a book, and maybe if you don't like it for the first time, you can still read a second time because it's so fast to read. It's a book called Frank Ocean. Fun fact, I figured out there is a German young author by the name Sophie Passmann. She wrote a book about her life-changing summer when she was diagnosed with bipolar dysfunction. And at the same time, she discovered Frank Ocean's Blonde, and it was the most important album for her in that time. And she wrote a book about it. And all the chapters have just 17 chapters with the names of the album, and you can read it in 1 hour.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So
I'm a slow reader. It would probably take me a week.
Yeah, but you also have a lot of other things to do. And you can listen to it on Spotify. It's also on Spotify if you want to listen to the...
Yeah?
Yeah, to it.
Cool. Is it in German or in...
Is it in German? It's a German author.
Then I'll listen to it.
So I just started it, but I figured, okay, maybe I'm already quite much into it.
I have issues reading children's books sometimes in German, so I'll stick with listening to it.
Yeah, that's good. Good training.
Daddy, that's not how you say that word.
quite good.
And for effect on the music industry, what would you give it?
Oh, the effect on the music industry,
not just Frank Ocean, the artist, though.
Yeah, the album.
Because the artist is he's got to be like a 10.
It's really hard for me for the album because it's such a standalone album. I don't know if people, I think they're inspired by it. There's a lot of interviews with artists, also like from Red Hot Chili Peppers to some of that. Frank Ocean is so great. But I don't know if they really try to, copy is a bad word, but how much it sounds like a lot of people say it's just good, but it's standalone. It's his art. So maybe the process, how he approaches his work has an influence on other artists. And this,
yeah, I could
like this, what you already mentioned, this being more outside of the social media marketing world and be more focused on the art and how to approach an album like this and how to have more this freedom. Maybe this has more impact on the industry than the all over sound.
I could see that. And the question is just whether it would be good for other people's careers to actually take a step back from social media.
Yes.
Because there's people that basically have built their careers around the social media.
Mm-hmm. And on the other side,
contact with fans.
He is using it both quite well. It's just all about the balance, right? Without the new way how we consume music, without putting a mixtape on a Tumblr or a Spotify or whatever, he maybe not be there where he's right now.
That's true.
But he's just picking the right moves from it. Right? He just use it quite properly for him, for his causes.
I find it interesting how I keep wondering if how he dealt with such a major label will affect other artists.
Yeah, that's a good part.
Because you hear a lot about about labels dropping the ball with certain musicians, but I've never heard it with a musician that's gotten this big. I've heard it with like indie rock bands and stuff, and then I'm like, okay, it's an indie band. If they thought there's this big swell of indie fans that like it, maybe it can become big, but then they kind of just put it on the back burner and it just stays there.
Yeah.
But not with an artist that then brings out like an album and it makes it onto number one on the Billboard top 100 kind of thing.
Man, that's also a good part. I can see that.
It'd be like when Taylor Swift started, if Sony was like, yeah, no, we don't need to. Just keep writing songs for us. It's okay.
Yeah, that wow.
I think for an actual grade on the effect, I think it's kind of a wait and see kind of thing.
I think so too.
Not yet complete,
but my guess it will be getting even more bigger than smaller the more time passes.
Yeah. I could see it becoming one of those albums that like 10 years down the line, when you talk to like new artists, they're like, yeah, when I was a kid, Frank Ocean Blonde came out and that totally changed how I looked at music. I could see that.
Yeah, this I can absolutely see. Yeah.
It will have introduced a whole new generation of people to, and future artists to, things like freeform jazz and just a jazz in general. I don't know that many younger people that listen to jazz, but if you listen to Frank Ocean, you'll hear the jazzy kind of feeling to some of the songs.
In general, to be more open to all kinds of music and to combine it. That's a good part. That's very nice. So, and in general, as last words about this album, what he likes to do to be visual, to paint pictures, that's something that really worked for me, as I anyway listened to music more about these all over sound from the beginning. Yeah, as I mentioned before, it makes me nostalgic, and nostalgia also has a lot to do with pictures in my head, but on a very, very, very nice way.
For my final thoughts, I think I was just kind of surprised in the end how much I actually changed my mind after listening to him talk about what he tries to do and then trying to listen to it with that in mind.
Yeah, that's
I thought it
cool.
Kind of showed me not to actually be closed off so much about music, which I can be at times. I try to be very open, but like the auto-tune thing gets to me. I don't like it. But
yeah, same here.
Maybe I'll take another look at some songs and artists that I previously didn't like because of a different effect that they used.
Yeah, that can happen. But right now, I think you're very open about this album and all the reviews.
Not Rock Party.
Yeah, but Taylor Swift, maybe not. Man, you cannot change your mind about all music. That would be asked too much. So much for this very intriguing and good album, Blonde. Now I'm maybe even more intrigued about the next album to discuss, because I know how hard it was for you to pick the next album. So let me know.
It's difficult. It's difficult basically every time I try to pick an album.
Yeah, but it sounded like this time was especially hard.
The only one I had no issue with was Taylor Swift. I kind of knew that right away. This album, I've heard the album many, many times. The first time I heard songs from it, though, were not from the album. It was live. And I wasn't in the audience. I actually mixed the show. And that was the first time I'd ever even heard of this guy. So it's a guy. I have some great stories from that I'll share next episode.
Oh, that's very cool.
And I've worked with him multiple times since then. And it's a type of music that we haven't really had yet.
Okay.
From 2012, we will be doing Be Good by Gregory Porter.
Oh, Gregory Porter.
It's a little bit of jazz soul.
Interesting. I only...
Do you know Gregory Porter?
Not really. And I know his voice, but I do not really know his songs, his albums, and all that. I know that a lot of people like him. I have friends that was very excited after an album in Stadtpark, so that would be an album that you worked, another album and concert that you worked with.
Stadtpark, I haven't actually done with him yet.
Haven't?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's always been when I've either been out of the country or when one of the girls was born.
Okay.
Because he's done multiple Stadtpark shows, but I've never been there. I mixed him at Uber Jazz Festival. His first, I think it was like his one of his first big ones in Germany. His first big shows.
Cool.
So we will be doing that.
Very good. Interested about the stories and about the work with him.
I don't even really know that much about him. I just know the voice and I like the voice. I haven't really done any deep dives into his work before or into his life. So I'm kind of interested to go into that.
Cool. Looking forward.
See if it changes my opinion on the music. He's very much someone that I went into listening to before ever reading anything about him. So all my opinions right now are without.
Same for me.
So that'll be good.
Almost blank.
Yeah, that's it.
That
was another very long episode, Barrick.
I know.
But fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
I hope that our listeners have lots of time to listen or a nice long drive to listen to this episode.
True.
So that's the end of the show. Join us next time when we talk about Gregory Porter's album from 2012, Be Good. Thanks for listening to the Modern Ear podcast. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite listening platform and rate and review and share the show. You can follow us on Instagram at the Modern Ear podcast for updates on upcoming shows.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Take care.